Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
It's time for the Midwest Outdoors with Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin. Brought to you by Reed Chevrolet, the Hearing Connection in St. Joe, the Sports Medicine Store, and Sportsman's Outfitters and Marine. Now, here are Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the Midwest Outdoors. Tickled to death to be with you this Saturday and every Saturday. AWOL, my co-host Mark Tobin, who is down at the lake. The crappie are biting, and I just had this imagine he would just vaporize. I think I was very, very accurate in my forecast. Mark, where in the world are you?
Yes, I'm down here at Lake of the Ozarks, and, you know, it's just we've had a couple of really nice days this week, and the wind wasn't blowing for a change, and off in the distance, I could hear a very faint voice calling my name. It was crappie beckoning me.
Well, I am hearing the darndest reports I've ever heard in my life about crappie fishing. Is it that good?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. It's just off the charts right now. I mean, just about everywhere. They really moved in force last weekend. And last weekend was a crummy weekend. It was pretty cold on Saturday. And Sunday it rained down here around the Ozark area from sunup till sundown. And we did real good Saturday. I didn't go out till about 4:30 Saturday afternoon. And Sunday just kept waiting for the rain to quit, and it didn't. But, again, those voices in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I got my rain gear on, which I normally don't do. I'm not quite as mad at the fish as I used to be. But just couldn't stand not being out there. So I went out there about 3:30, and, again, just – I mean, we just hammered them. And I didn't keep a lot of the fish that we caught, but I had one crappie that was oozing eggs. And I did catch, kept enough for a meal. And a couple of the females that I had, the eggs were getting some texture to them. So they were, even last week, it seemed like within a week and 2 weeks, they'd really be in full force. And that kind of, the timing is kind of coinciding with, you know, from what I hear, a full moon, when you have a full moon, you have a lot of spawning activity.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't quite full last night, but it was bright. It was probably at least better than three-quarters of a full moon.
Hmm.
And so the fish are up on the banks. The males have gotten real dark. They were just starting to get some color last week, but my son caught a few yesterday. And last night, I didn't get down here until about 11:15 last night. And, of course, the first thing I did was walk down to the dock to see if there was anything to add. By 11:15, I went down there. By 11:20, I had six fish.
Wow.
So even almost 11:30 at night, I'm still catching a few fish. But with that bright moon, I know that I could have stayed out and caught fish last night. And that's one thing people don't do a lot of this time of year is night fish.
Sure.
When you've got a bright moon like that, again, you have a lot of spawning activity during those full moons, and it's so much easier. It's just easy to fish when you've got that kind of light. But I'm telling you, with the weather the way it is this weekend, there's going to be a ton of people out on the water, and it's going to be hard to find a spot that hadn't been already pounded. But you can avoid some of that traffic by doing this at night, and this is a good time of year.
Yes, it is.
Go out at night,
yeah,
and catch fish and beat that crowd. But the males that we caught yesterday and the ones I caught last night were getting jet black. So the spawn is in progress. I mean, they are starting to spawn right now, and it's going to be good for the next two weeks are going to be prime time.
Boy,
especially with the weather the way it's setting up right now.
The weather's been so bizarre. It's been so cold. I was out the other morning to go turkey hunting, and I thought that sitting there, and again, I went, why am I here? You know, why I got frost on my feet here, you know. And I'm sitting there against that tree stump trying to look like a radish. And, man, I'm telling you, it was just miserable. And I said, well, I know where they sell ham and eggs. So.
Much better idea.
A lot better idea, you know, in the deal. I tell you something that's happened, Mark, in my humble opinion. In the last 3 days, the turkeys, everybody I was talking to, not everybody, 90% of the guys I'm talking to were saying, you know, what happened to the birds? And yours truly here was saying the same thing.
Right.
All of a sudden, it started. And it's just been so late for the turkey season. And places that I've been, I went like 3 days in a row, and I never heard a turkey gobble. I never saw a turkey. I never called in a turkey. And the other morning I go out, and I hate to tell this on the air, but I forgot my turkey calls. And so couldn't participate in the deal, but had to go all the way back home, end up being a blessing in disguise. But all of a sudden there were six goblin over here and three goblin over there, and I went, wow, it's starting to finally turn on a little bit.
Well, and last week we had Kelly Kurtz in studio with us, and you were both kind of bemoaning the fact it didn't seem like there was hardly any bird. Now, we're talking up in the northern part of Minnesota.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So you weren't hearing anything. You both thought that the turkey numbers were just way off.
Yep.
So that's just crazy that you're hearing so many. That's great.
Yeah, and I think they were still in their winter flocks, and if you just didn't happen to sit down in a bunch of them, you know, you're just dooming and glooming and thinking there was none around. And it is down. It is down quite a little bit, but it's starting to brighten back up. Yesterday I had a bizarre thing I thought I'd share with you, Mark, and all three of our listeners. But I went out and to another farm, and I was supposed to be the only one in there, and I think I saw six people in the first hour, and it was just bizarre deal. But anyway, so I went to another place and sat down, and I started calling, and all of a sudden I look up in the woods and I see movement, and here comes a hen walking through the woods, and there's a hen behind her and a whole bunch of hens, and end up like seven hens in a row all came up there to me, and they got within 8 feet of the bottom of my feet. I was laying up against a log in a tree, and they got in the darndest fight I ever saw.
Really?
And it was spectacular. I mean, I didn't have to pull the trigger. It was just too darn cool. And some of the noises that they were making, I had never heard a turkey. It was like a clicking noise. And this hen was just clicking, click, click, click. And I don't know how to describe it to anybody, but it was really bizarre. And one of the hens was so dominant, and she was just thrashing all the rest of the hens. And I don't know what that was all about. You know,
have you ever seen anything like that before?
Never. Never in my life. Now, I've seen gobblers fight, you know, in the spring and all this kind of stuff, but I've never saw, and these hens just squared off at each other, and they beat that. And one of them was so dominant, she was just thrashing the rest of them out of the deal.
It was just that time of the month for her.
Evidently. I don't know what was going on, but she didn't want anybody to get ahead of her. She came first, and when she got to about, and they always lock in on where you're calling from, and she knew she was real close to me, and all of a sudden she turned around, and these other three or four came running up over the bank. Some of them stayed over the bank, and she turned around and just beat the snot out of these other turkeys.
Where's the camera when you need it?
Yeah, and it was just hilarious, but I learned something. The noises, I think I've heard this noise before, but didn't relate it to turkeys, and I'm trying to learn as I hunt turkeys, and it was just the most bizarre, and I can't describe it. It was just a real loud ticking noise type thing, and that they were doing, and boy, when she turned around and pecked one of those other hens and beat her with her wings, and she got, burp, burp, you know, and you go, golly, and it was just hilarious, and this went on for 2 or 3 minutes there in front of me, and all of a sudden one of them went, hey, that's a hunter. Hey, we better leave. And boy, when they decided to leave, they left.
Enough of our petty differences. Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, yeah. So it was just, it was cool to be there and see that, you know, weird. But it just shows you, I got thinking about it on the way home. I don't think too often, but when I was on the way home, I thought, you know, it's just there's a peck order in everything in life, and there's a peck order with the gobblers, and I assume there's a peck order with the hens, and she's the dominant hen, and Mother Nature's telling her, hey, she needs to get bred and start her clutch. So she was running to me thinking there was a gobbler around. I don't tell this on the air, but I'm going to tell this. I do something stupid while I'm out there hunting. I spit and drum a lot. I've got a little plastic bottle that I carry in my back package, and I sit there and I go like that with my voice, and with that it's an old plastic Coke bottle, and it just resins like crazy, and I would yelp, and then I would spit and drum, and it was so calm. I think they can hear that over 100 yards away, and I think she thought there was a dominant gobbler up there, and Mother Nature was telling her it was her time to do the breeding process, and I think she thought, I'm going to be the first one bred out of this bunch, and I think that's why she was so dominant and so upset that any other turkeys were around her. So it was just a beautiful thing to see in the woods, although in the whole thing way back in the distance, about 70 yards back, I finally got a glimpse of an old gobbler strutting. But when all of a sudden the hens about stepped on my foot and they decided, this is a hunter, and they started doing that alarm putting and perts, and they turned and ran, and a couple of them flew, and the gobbler never was to be seen again on the deal. So I move over to another little patch, and I don't hardly ever move. Once I get set down, I stay pretty well put. So I move over to another little patch of timber, and I start calling there, and an almost identical thing happened again. And it was different birds. It wasn't the same birds, but I called in a bunch of other hens, too, and they were making that clicking noise and weird noise that I'd never heard before. But now that I've tuned my ear to it, I think that I'm starting to pick up on it just a little bit. So it was just bizarre, weird day to be in the woods, but it was pretty darn cool, honestly.
Why do you spit and drum?
That's how that old gobbler, he's trying to impress the girls. I used to do that at closing time out the bar in the parking lot. I'd stand out in the parking lot and go, psk, and it never worked.
Yeah, but, well, that's good. I would be concerned if it did.
Yeah, they would turn and run from me from time to time thinking, what, some guy's gone nuts again, you know. But anyway, it just that spit and drum. And, it's the most unique sound you can hear while you're turkey hunting. And I'm always amazed at it. Sounds like somebody's snapping a big rubber band. It's just that drum it makes. And I take a lot of people out turkey hunting, and I'll hear that. I've tuned my ears so much to hear the spit and drum that I can hear it a long, long way off. I think on a calm morning I can hear it over 100 yards away. And it's a shame. I'll have people and have a bird within 20 yards of it, and he's spitting and drumming, and no one ever hears it. You know, and it's just the most unique sound in the woods on a wild turkey that you can hear. And a lot of times you don't hear gobble. They don't gobble much. You know, as the day gets long, they're going to start picking it up. Now they're probably 10 o'clock. If you hear a gobbler at 10 o'clock, you're probably going to get a shot at him. But, boy, it's just the weirdest turkey year I have ever saw. And, you know, I hang out with some guys that are some of the best darn turkey hunters in the United States, probably. And if they can't harvest one, nobody should be able to, and they're hunting up in northwest Missouri. And I'm looking at the counts here. Again, the zone, the northern half of the state, other than in Putnam County, a few of those counties around Kirksville and up in there, there's a lot of harvest. But, Nottoway County, Atchison County, Holt County, Buchanan County, Gentry County, just not hardly any birds harvested at all. On
still.
The deal. Yeah, it's just that map, you know, that we were looking at, if you remember last week.
Right, yeah,
I was
going to ask you about that.
It's still about the same color, and it's just, I don't know, I just think it's kind of bizarre. Who we got lined up as a guest?
We're going to have Clint Hale. He is the hatchery manager, the Troutman hatchery manager down at Shepherd of the Hills Fish Hatchery in Branson, Missouri.
Well, he's
got a
good
tournament coming up here in May that we're going to talk about and find out what's going on. They've got a new visitor center that they're going to be breaking ground on here before too long. We'll get the latest update on that as well.
Oh, cool. He's always a great guest.
Oh, yeah, he really knows his stuff, and he's just a great guy. He's a good friend, and just really love him to death.
You got a friend?
I do. Now, I guess that went out. The public just heard that, but not very many people would believe that.
Well, you got another one? You got one other one? Or how many friends you got, Mark? You want to talk about it?
They're in low places.
I'm kind of a counselor, you know, if you need to kind of vent a little bit.
Thank you, Fred.
I can help you out a little bit. Tell you what, we got to take a little break. Before we do that, our sponsor, and I'm so proud of these guys. These are the finest humans to walk upright on the face of the earth, and the King City Lumber Company, Monty Tunks and Marty. If you guys, and Mark, last week we talked about building a shed for your horsey.
Yes, and we had a couple of people wondered what a horsey was.
Are you thinking about buying a horse now and putting in your backyard?
No.
Off of this commercial?
You did not convince me, no.
Oh, no?
Do a little better sales job.
Have you got a big enough yard to have a horsey?
I do.
You do? Uh-huh. Well, maybe you ought to think about a horsey.
Well, my neighbors have two horseys.
Your neighbors have
horseys?
Now
that I know what they are, I wasn't sure what they were last week when you mentioned that.
Uh-huh. Do you ever ride their horsies?
They do.
Do you?
Oh, I don't know. I'll give them a carrot every now and then.
A carrot?
Yes.
Okay.
They like carrots.
They like carrots?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to clarify that while we were on the air. Before they bump us off the air, I wanted to clarify that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, how much longer you figure we'll be here before they fire us?
Well, it's seeming like that's not too far in the future.
Yeah. Right now. Yeah, can't
we keep heading down this path.
Yeah, I know. They probably don't like it. I don't know. We'll talk to them one of these days. Hey, we're brought to you by King City Lumber. If you need a shed for your horsey, or if you need a garage built behind your house, or you need a cabin built in the woods, or maybe you need a machine shed to put your combine in, keep it out of the weather, your tractor and that kind of stuff. There's so many people I have talked to. Kelly, that was with us last week, Mark, they had King City Lumber come and built their shed out back, their garage. And
I heard him say that. He loves it.
Oh, yeah. And these guys, there's a bunch of slam-dunk people that run around the face of the earth and put some poles to the ground and slap some tubifores across it and put some sheet metal over top of it. Well, that's not the way to build them. King City Lumber knows how to build them. They're master craftsmen. They're the finest humans that you'll ever be involved with. Marty and Monty at Tunks up in King City Lumber. Please go to their website. It's kingcitylumber.com. Be prepared to stay there for a while. They've got some of the most unique buildings in the world on that webpage. And I've looked at it a million times, and I still stick on it for 20, 30 minutes at a time. And I have dreams and inspirations of building it one of these days. But if you want something that master craftsmen build, they build them. They build them right. They build them to last. I've been in them that are 20 years old. These guys have been around for a long, long time building, and there's nobody finer than King City Lumber Company. They'll come to your house, give you an estimate, give you the bid, go over the details with it, and if it's not right when they're done, they'll make it right. You'll be the happiest customer they ever had. Again, it's kingcitylumber.com. They're up in King City, Missouri. And if you are in the mode, these are the people to do business with. Again, kingcitylumbercompany.com. Got to take a little break. We'll be right back with you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. My co-host, AWOL, the crop ear biting. I don't blame him. I'd rather be there than sitting here, to be straight up with you. Or I'd like to know, maybe I got one little patch where I got two-year-old gobblers that are right now are probably starting to gobble like crazy. And I'd rather be sitting in the woods. And Mark, you don't know how close I came to calling you and saying, hey.
We had to do a rerun.
We were at that edge to do the rerun on the darn thing. Hey, we are brought to you by Highway Trailer Sales. My good friend Terry Lee, if you guys have a lot of 18-wheeler guys listen to our show and they pull trailers, of course, especially the grain haulers. If you need bearings, brakes, maybe it's been involved in an accident and you need a professional to fix it, these are the finest humans to walk upright. They are great, great people. I can't say enough good things about Terry. I met him here a few weeks ago. Felt like I'd known him for 20 years. I always go and talk to the people when they become sponsors here on the radio show. And he is over there on 1850 Southern Road, which is basically kind of west of World of Fun there, but just off 435. I don't think I've ever been around a nicer human, a more professional person. All their staff and all their people are great, great humans. So for you guys out here that finally maybe got a trailer that is in need of disrepair, I don't care what kind it is. I've got a list of all the trailers that they will work on, and I don't know if it's huge. So if you've got the trailer and you need repair or you need maintenance on it, there's no finer people. Love him to death. Highway Trailer Sales, and you're going to love him too because he's going to do what he says and do it to the money, and he's going to do it right. Again, 1850 Southern Road, Kansas City, Missouri. If you need an office number, it's an 816 area code number, 483-3676. That's 816-483-3676. Or you can just simply go to their highwaytrailer.com And there's no finer person that you'll ever do business with. I will guarantee you they'll stand behind you 100%. Highway Trailer Sales, go by and see him. You're going to love this guy. We need to take his boy fishing, Mark.
Yeah, you know, and you can't overstate what a good guy he is. I just talked to him a couple of weeks ago about some trailers that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, from the first time I talked to him, it's like you're talking to somebody that you've known for years. He's just that kind of a guy.
Yeah.
What a great guy to do business with.
Yeah, since I've been doing these commercials, I've ran into three or four of the farmer guys that haul them grain trailers, and they just, yeah, we heard you talking about him. He's everything and more than what you're saying on the air. I can't do enough good commercial for him.
Nope. Nope. What a great guy. Yeah, and, yeah, I guess from what I hear, his son, 14-year-old, but it sounds like he can fish a lot of people under the table. Sounds like he's a top-notch guy. So, yeah, I'm real excited to take him out.
Maybe he can teach us something.
Oh, I know he can.
Yeah. Which wouldn't take much.
unfortunately, that's sad but true.
Blow the dam at Truman. Are they any good, Mark? They catch any fish?
Yep. White bass and some hybrids. The walleye bites definitely tailed off, but the big draw right now is crappie. Crappie are just, they're up on the banks. They're very aggressive. The weather is very conducive. This is just a perfect stretch. I mean, it's almost like the perfect storm for the crappie fishing right now.
Mm.
We've had some stable weather. We've got the time of year is right. And so, yeah, there's going to be a ton of crappie caught this weekend.
Mm.
Did you, when you were out turkey hunting, have you come across any ticks yet?
I have taken one tick off my coat. But I still got some wampa bug that impregnated on my coat. And you could tell that this thing, I can just barely smell it now, but it's still working. And
A week later? Or how long?
Oh, it's been on there. I had it on last. I keep them in a plastic bag a lot of times, but I've had that stuff on there forever. And you can tell that they smell it, and they don't want no part of it. And I have not physically been bitten by one in years now since I've been using wampa bug. So,
wow.
You know, and you can tell when they get... When they get around that stuff, you know, man, they roll over on their back. It's hilarious.
Well, I'm telling you. I got to tell you a whoop-a-bug story. I was down here at the lake house last weekend, and we had some of those little tiny ants. And they'll have a little path that they follow, and it just happened to be right underneath. We've got a little overhang on our kitchen windows. It just overhangs the counter by an inch and a half. And they were just going to beat town back and forth along there. And there was a little group of about five or six that had stopped for whatever reason. And I just gave one squirt of whoop-a-bug. And it killed all of those that were right there. And I have not seen another ant. This is a week later, and there's not another ant there. Now, I don't know what happened. Because there was a ton of them going across there.
That stuff's too good to be true.
I thought bugs just, I don't care what kind of bug it is, they don't like it. And well, I had a little bucket of water out on my patio, and it wasn't stagnant water or anything, but just 2 days ago, I was outside cleaning on the patio, and that bucket was just full of mosquito larvae.
Yeah, boy.
So they're getting ready to be bad, even though it's been dry. I mean, it's been awful dry, but those mosquitoes find a way. But, yeah, if you're going out in the woods, you spray any place that you sit, you spray the whoop-a-bug on the trees and the ground around you, don't you?
Yeah, and I sit down in it, and you can just see them going, and they panic and away they go, you know. That stuff, what's cool about it, it's biodegradable. You can actually drink it. It doesn't have the DEET in it, and I don't like that DEET stuff. I hear too many horror stories about that stuff. And this wampa bug, it's a little more money than anybody else's, but I've had the same bottle now for 3 years, I guess, 8-ounce bottle. And I still got 6 ounces left, 5 ounces left of the thing, you know.
Well, it's cedar oil, citronella oil, and lemongrass oil. It's got some pepper oil in it. That's the only downside to it, that pepper oil. The pepper oil is what bugs really don't like.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get it in your eyes, that will burn. And that's the only downside. Other than that, you're going to smell like lemon pledge.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's very pleasant. And, again, no insecticides in it. Yeah, it's great.
Great stuff. There's nothing.
It's available, by the way. All of the Westlake Hardwares in town have it, and a lot of garden centers in Kansas City have it as well.
Yeah. Well, I've got the. I don't know if we should talk about this. A lot of ladies got their roses and bushes and things that bugs are getting eat up on.
Fred,
we better not talk about this, had we? Yeah.
Well, go ahead now.
Well, that's okay. But this stuff.
It was just an experiment.
Well, I, you know, it's just absolutely too good to be true, and maybe we better not talk about it, but you can use a little gray matter there. You can understand what I'm talking about on the deal. But it's a great product. There's nothing like it anywhere on this thing. So what are you hearing over in Kansas, Mark? Any fish being caught over there?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it's starting to get good over there. And for some reason, though, it's a little bit behind the Missouri lakes, but they're still starting to come on. And again, a lot of crappie are starting to be had, but a little bit behind the Missouri lakes. But that's everything is changing so fast now. And we got the full moon cycle, and the water is warming up now.
Starting to work, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, my producer's about to die. He's going to fall out of the chair if we don't take a break, and I don't blame him a bit. He's turned green looking. I think it's his coffee. You ought to drink a shot of this coffee he made this morning. Oh, make the hair stand up on the back of your neck. I'll guarantee you that. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. We're going to take a little break. We'll be right back with you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I can take a moment here. We are sponsored by Reed Chevrolet up in St. Joseph, Missouri. Why are people driving all the way from Springfield, from Des Moines, from Omaha to do business at Reed Chevrolet? They're the number one in zone silver of Silverado pickups. It's because of price. Let's just don't sugarcoat it. They're their finest humans, free lifetime oil changes, non-commissioned salesmen. I've never been around more successful and wonderful people in my life. When I have a little bit of time off, I go up and hang out with those guys because I like being around successful people. So if you're in the mode for a Silverado and you're tired of the hype and you're going to have a salesman who's going to earn your business, then you need to go by and spend a little time with Reed Chevrolet. They're the finest humans to walk the face of the earth. They've got a huge inventory. If you're looking for a used one, they've got that. So whatever you're looking for and you want to be treated with respect, then you go see the good people at Reed Chevrolet, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart. And they're sponsoring a big tournament on the river where you can win a Silverado pickup. You'll be hearing more and more about that. So, Mark, who we got lined up as a guest?
Well, we have the number one hatchery manager down at the Shepherd of the Hills Fish Hatchery at Brants, Missouri. Now, I won't hold this against him, but he is also an avid Chiefs fan.
Woo.
And just an all-around good guy, a good friend of mine. He is Clint Hale. Good morning, Clint. Thank you for
good morning, guys. How you doing?
All right, Clint. How you doing?
No, doing great. Doing great.
How hard was it to get out of bed this morning?
Very.
I hate to do that to you on Saturday morning, so I
it's okay.
Doing that. Well, you've got a tournament coming up here before too long that you're pretty excited about. Can you kind of tell us about that?
Oh, yeah, we have. So this year I'm president of the Missouri chapter of the American Fishery Society, and we are sponsoring a trout tournament on Lake Taneycomo on May 19th this year, and part of the proceeds are going to go to the Missouri chapter does a lot for student support, whereas we do a lot for student scholarships for college students that are aspiring biologists or people wanting to get into hatcheries or the fisheries field. So it's 30% of the proceeds are going to go towards scholarships for students. So it's going to be a good tournament. Hopefully we'll have a good turnout, and it's going to be at Lily's Landing and Phil Lilly, which you know, Mark.
Right, great.
Good guy, and he's going to help us with this, and hopefully we have a good turnout. This is the first time we've done this. MOAFS used to do fishing tournaments on Table Rock a long time ago for student sport. And they kind of quit doing it. And since I become president this year, I thought, why, you know, we're part of a fishery society. Why don't we have another tournament and do something with it? So that's what we're doing.
Are you trying to get kids involved with the tournament, or does it matter if somebody wants to fish it? Do they have to have a kid with them, or how does that work?
No. It's open to all and to anybody.
Okay.
Uh-oh, Tobin. You might be able to fish that turbot, Tobin. He said yeah, anybody.
That's one thing I exempted myself from fishing the tournament. Because I couldn't imagine if I may catch some flack of I maybe knew where the fish were stocked.
Yeah, you think you might have an unfair advantage.
You're a ringer.
Right.
You're a ringer.
Yeah, exactly. Because initially I thought, well, I'll fish it. I never fish it. I fish a lot of bass tournaments, but not trout tournaments. I thought, no, that's not a good idea.
Yeah. You're a ringer.
Yeah, yeah. So I will not fish it. I will be a person who welcomes everybody to the tournament and helps with the weigh-in, but I will not be fishing it.
What's the entry fee?
Entry fee is $70 per team. Two-man team, and $10 for big trout, and that's optional. Now, for big trout, that pot of money, that's 100% payout. So,
ooh,
yeah, it's and big trout. That's going to be first place and second place, and payouts be 70% for first, 30% for second.
Huh. Cool.
Cool.
What time's the takeoff and the weigh-in?
So the takeoff, the entry deadline actually is the morning of the tournament at 7:45.
Okay.
And so that's when Phil's going to have a safety briefing and a rules briefing at his place. So and then I think takeoff is at 8. If I remember, I got the flyer in front of me. It's also on OzarkAnglers.com. Phil's got it posted on the Taney Como fishing forum. So a person can go there and actually have a link to the website, and he can actually register from there.
Cool.
So I'm hoping for at least 50 boats, cool. You know, up to 100. My dad owns a sporting goods store, so I've done it through his store and then other avenues. I'm hoping it's they don't have a lot of tournaments on Taney Como, surprisingly. They do on Table Rock, but they don't on Taney Como. But Phil does a lot of them that are, so we'll see.
See what happens.
You know, I fish for trout mostly exclusively in January and February. I just kind of a creature of habit that way. How does the fishing in the winter for trout compare to fishing in the spring? Is there a lot of difference?
You know, there isn't much difference.
Really?
Not much difference in normal years because Taney Como's water temperature doesn't fluctuate a whole lot. So it's... I mean, you could say it's better if you find where we stocked them, the day before or something. But
ringer,
yeah, exactly. but it's good throughout now. Midsummer, we have some maybe some issues with catching fish on the very lower end because we don't stock below Bull Creek in the summer because the water's too hot.
Sure.
On the surface temp. Now, down below, it's still fine, but on the surface temp, we don't really want to stress these fish out so we don't go below Bull Creek.
Are you stocking regularly during the winter? I mean, during the spring and summer?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's we stock so many per month, 700,000 a year. In the summer months, starting in June, July, August, we're stocking 80,000 fish.
Wow.
Per month. We're talking a lot. And stock less in the winter months, but you have a lot less fishing pressure in the winter months. So it's based on fishing pressure and food availability throughout the year in that lake.
Hmm.
But, yeah, fishing's usually good year-round.
If there's some people, some parents out there that want to take their kids out to Taney Como and try to catch some trout, what advice would you give the beginner to get started catching them?
I would I wouldn't fish in the artificial only, the upper 3 miles of Tanny Como. I would fish below Fall Creek, where anything, where they can fish with anything, doe bait, live bait, anything like that. And I would start probably at your fishing docks and stuff on the landing, or Cooper Creek has a really nice accessible fishing dock. And I would start with some doe bait or some natural bait or something like that, trying to fish if you're just starting out. And actually, if you're just starting out, trout parks are a good way to teach kids how to fish. They have kids fishing days in May, where you can take a kid. And I help out with those every year and usually work the first fish booth, where we give first fish certificates to kids that come there and catch their first fish ever.
Mm.
And
how cool.
Usually I give them to kids that catch their first trout ever.
That's awesome.
So it's a picture of them with their first fish and everything about that day. And I think it's a really good thing, and kids really like it. They frame, you know, the parents will frame it for them. And trout parks are really a good place for kids, because it's stocked daily. And so kids are more likely to catch some fish, and wherein they're more likely to want to fish some more. So.
Exactly. Hey, Clint, when you stock these, are these 6-inch fish, 8-inch fish? Do they vary? Do you ever throw in brood stock? What's your whole program on that?
Yeah, it's a good question. We stock in Tanny Como. The average, we take an average of like a pool of fish, say like our big pools of stockable fish, or there's 20,000 fish in there. So we can't measure away every one, so we do a sample. And then we get an average of that population of fish, and they got to average 11 inches before we stock them in Tanny Como.
Nice trout.
And in the trout parks, it's different. They got to average 12 and a half inches.
Wow.
So because, and the reason for that is, the trout parks are usually spring fed. Their water source is from a spring, and that's usually around the mid to upper 50s year round. But Tanny Como, as you know, is in the mid 40s. Mm. And so the colder the water, the slower the metabolism, the slower they grow. So it takes us almost twice as long to grow a catchable fish than a trout park does. That's why we have the smaller size. It takes us, for example, it takes us 18 months to grow 11-inch fish, whereas in a trout park it would take around a year to grow 11-inch fish.
Huh.
Wow.
So big difference.
Big
difference.
Stock
clunkers, we do that based on, we have a calculation or a spreadsheet where it calculates stream miles and habitat in a stream. I don't really know the particulars of the calculation, but we have a calculation of how many brood stock or 3-pound-plus fish go into a stream per year.
Wow.
Based on availability. And Tanny Como gets the, for lack of a better, lion's share of the brood stock per year. Usually we do 300 to 500 brood stock or cull brood stock. These are brood stock that we've used for many years that are getting too big, hard to handle, or don't have good viable eggs when we go to spawn.
Wow.
So, and then the trap parks get so many per year, and they use them for opening day, kids fishing days, and stuff like that. And then our trout management areas get so much too. So, yeah, we spread those out the best we can based on habitat and stream miles.
How many years have you been doing this, Clint?
Well, I started at Merrimack Spring, and I worked temporary when I was going to college in the late 90s, and I became full-time in 2002, so quite a while.
Has trout management changed any over the years that you've been involved in that?
Not a whole lot. We've changed size a little bit. Since I started with Tanny Como, it was 10 inches when I first got to Shepherd in 08. Then it went to 12. And then they realized that was really a problem to to, you know, it took us 2 years to raise 12-inch fish.
Wow.
And so then it went back down. I told him 11-inch fish was, you know, a better number that we could raise. But really, trout, man, you know, in the trout parks since I started, it used to be 5-fish limit, went down to 4. But when it went down to 4, it went from stocking 2 fish per tag in the trout parks per day to 2.25. So stocking more fish and bigger fish, but the limit went down by 1. So that's about the only changes that I've seen. So,
yeah, I had a guy talk to me about that the other day. We had you on, a month ago or so?
Uh-huh.
And he said, I wish you'd have asked him. He said, it seems to me like they put broodstock in more in January. He's talking quality fish, you know, 3-pound fish in January. And I said, I don't think that's accurate. I don't know. I said, that's a good question to ask him. I wish I would have asked him. So you basically, he's kind of spread them out, whether it's January, May, June, July, August. You've got some broodstock going in all the time then, don't you?
So we talking Taney Como?
Yeah.
Yeah. Taney Como, we like to spread it out. So, say my guys are going to stock a little fish. A little fish is around 6,000-7,000 fish per 5-ton trout or 2,000-gallon tank. And, you know, usually I'll say, well, you know, throw 30 brood stock on there, 50 or whatever today. And we try to spread that out. We don't stock them all at one time. I try to stay away from that. So we try to stock them throughout the year. So, yeah, he may have been just catching them, found some, you know, big fish somewhere or whatever. But we try to spread them out through the whole year. And it's kind of hard because you're only stocking 300 to 500. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not stocking a lot comparatively to the 700,000 stockers that we stock per year.
I remember years ago when I was down at Fall Creek and the big controversy of putting browns in there. And these guys got heated over this. They're going to run this fishery. And, I mean, it was almost in-their-face type things. And I thought, Jesus, wish, you know. Do you ever hear any of that complaint anymore? There's too many browns or you don't have enough browns? Or is it got to be a balance or... Do you wish you'd never put them in? I mean, where's that at?
Man, you bring up that is a great point. I'm glad you brought that up. Brown trout program started in Missouri in the late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And it started at Shepherd, for the state of Missouri, started at Shepherd of the Hills. Neosho was stocking browns. Neosho National Fish Hatchery was raising browns before Shepherd. And we raised 2 strains of browns, and one strain was more of a wild strain, whereas, you know, we didn't alter it in any way or genetically to be domesticated like our rainbows. And then we had a domesticated strain. So long story short, it was deemed that we should stock the wild strain of trout. And we weren't going to stock a lot of browns because we didn't want them to outcompete and we wanted it to be a trophy fishery. Now, yeah, there was a lot of opposition back in the day, but now there's that's probably one of the most popular trout that we stub more than rainbows. I mean, because everybody wants to catch brown trout. So really, I haven't heard any complaints about brown trout because we don't stock enough to outcompete with the rainbows. So,
boy, that was heated. That was a heated debate at one time.
Oh, yes, and actually the more heated debate than that was the upper 3 miles changing that to artificial only.
I remember that one, too.
And what's crazy, and back in the day, I've heard that our regional supervisor in fisheries was getting, like, death threats over changing the regulation.
Oh, yeah.
And we had a lot of people. Yeah, it's crazy. We had a lot of people, you know, change. It's bad to a lot of people. It's different. But when they've seen how good it has worked for this fishery, there's zero complaints about it today, of course, that I get. But, yeah, there was.
Oh, boy.
Even, and I'm going to I'm gonna say it on the radio, but still, was apprehensive. A lot of people were, and I understand
sure,
it.
Sure,
I understand it, but today, yeah, there's no complaints.
Nobody likes change, do they?
No, my gosh, they don't.
Yeah. Hey, we're about out of time. Tell us about tournament again.
Yeah, trout tournament on Teenicomo, Saturday, May 19th at Lily's Landing. And you can call Phil to reserve your spot. It's for the Missouri chapter of the American Fishery Society. It's a tournament to benefit student support, where we part of the proceeds goes for scholarships for kids wanting to get in the fisheries field.
That's great. Well, Clint, you're a great guest.
Let me ask you real quick on kids' fishing days. How can people get more information about that for their kids?
Yeah, so you can go to our website, mdc.mo.gov, and click on the fisheries division and the hatcheries, and it will have our individual hatcheries, and it'll have the kids' fishing days. There's two weekends in May where we have them, and I can't remember the order, but, you know, Bennett Spring, Roaring River, Montauk, Merrimack. There'll be two of the hatcheries having it one day and two of the hatcheries having it another weekend. And I can't remember off the top of my head, but then go to mdc.mo.gov to find more information on that.
Mark, we're out of time.
Oh, I wanted to tell you, we do with the Fishery Society. Yesterday we started a Facebook page with MOAFS for people that maybe want to be, you know, be members. We're open to anybody being members and helping out. We do a lot with disabled angling and other items related to fisheries. So
good.
You know, we have a Facebook page that's starting yesterday.
What is the Facebook address?
If you look up the Missouri chapter of the American Fishery Society, it should take you right to it. I think I shared it with everybody yesterday. I may have invited you, Mark. I don't remember.
No, don't do that.
We'll put a link to that on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page, by the way, Sports Radio Midwest Outdoors, Sports Radio 810 WHB. If you're not a friend, please get on there and give us a like.
Oh, yeah.
We'd really appreciate it.
Clint, we're out of time. You're a great guest. We got to dedicate a whole hour to you here one of these days real quick.
Well, I do it, guys. I really appreciate it every time you have me on.
All right.
Good man, Clint. Give Stephanie a hug for me.
I sure will, bud.
All right.
Okay.
Mark, one thing I need to talk to you about, too, mushroom picking is at its peak down around Butler, Nevada, Springfield. If you don't get out there, we're out of time. Take your boat to Joe Falco, get it worked on. Would that be a fair thing to say, Mark?
Yes. This is the last day of spoonbill season out here, but I'm still seeing a boat every now and then. Not quite the numbers that I saw early on when spoonbill season started. But, yeah, if you're going to... Your boat's going to break down. That's just a given. Whenever you buy one, it will happen.
Yep.
If it hadn't happened yet, it's going to happen. So just remember, Sportsman's Outfitter and Marine.
Good humans.
Out in Belton off the Cass Road exit. They can take good care of
you. Mark, I miss you. I didn't give you a hug this morning. I miss you.
I miss you, too.
Okay.
And
All right.
I'd really like to see some mushrooms in the
All
studio.
Right. I'll bring you some next Saturday.
Okay.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, that wraps it up for this edition of the Midwest Outdoors Week. The next time I see you, I hope I see you in the great outdoors.